coming to you from the City of the Weird. Exploring topics from the esoteric and unexplored to dimensions unknown. Shining a light of truth on the darkest corners of our reality. Welcome to the Curious Realm.
Well, hello everybody, and welcome to this episode of The Curious Realm, episode 39. So glad for all of you who have been tuning in since episode 1. So glad for all of you that have been tuning in since episode 1 of our previous incarnation, before we became Curious Realm. Thank you for sticking around. Thank you for being a part of the ongoing community online. Looking forward to a great episode this evening. Our first guest coming up here in just a minute. After our News of the Week segment, we will be talking with Archbishop James Cloud. He is the author of Walking with Ghosts, an exorcist memoir of the paranormal. We will be talking with him about Antichrist prophecies. There has been a lot in the news lately. Rivers drying up, things like that. Dogs and cats living together, mass hysteria. We will be getting into the topic of the Antichrist, exactly what the Antichrist is, what are the signs that herald the arrival of the Antichrist in the Christian religion, and what exactly we should be on the lookout for, what is happening in the world around us, which may be heralding that coming. After a commercial break, we will be talking with cryptozoologist, author and researcher and history teacher Ryan Edwards out of San Antonio. We had the opportunity to hop out this last weekend to the Wonderland UFO Festival out there, and it was super cool. Really neat little pop culture con they had. Daniel Allen Jones was presenting. We did not get to stay for his presentation, but did get to see him. So as we ran into Ryan there, it was like, hey, why don't you come on the show Tuesday night? So we'll be talking with Ryan Edwards in our pre-recorded segment about his book, Cryptids of the World. We will be talking about cryptids that cross cultural boundaries, cryptids that cross geologic boundaries, even those across the globe. So we'll be talking about that so much more this evening. Of course, before we get started, let's hop on over to the internet, to the Facebook. That is where we can check out the News of the Week. News of the Week is always brought to you by the Curious Realm Facebook group, where we post articles and have conversations. Some of the news this week at futurism.com. Pakistani official says a third of the country is underwater in, quote, apocalyptic flood. Out of futurism.com, Walmart caught selling fake hard drive that just shreds your data. Out of NDTV, there was a rare rainbow scarf cloud that stunned people in China. Absolutely gorgeous. Looks like a full-on rainbow aural strip. Just gorgeous. Out of the drive, does this Area 51 photo show a secret aircraft or a shadow of a cloud? Out of astronomy, Planet 9 may be responsible for the tilting sun. We need to get our good friend on about that here soon. And Pamela Coleman Smith was the artist and occultist who designed the iconic tarot deck. Why has no one ever heard her name? That out of newsart.net. That's just some of the news this week there in our Facebook group. Stop on by, join the conversation, join the group. Over 1,000 members there. While you're there, make sure to stop on by curiousrealm.com. That is the website. That is our homepage. That is where you can find all of the episodes. That's where you can download the free app. That is where you can also go to curiousrealm.com/story. And share your account of the paranormal. If you are someone who has been through an exorcism, if you're someone who is a targeted individual, has hauntings at your location, you can stop by. You can share your story. We will share it on air with our professionals, our researchers, and see what we can't offer you as far as explanations for what's going on with you. Stop on by, check that out. CuriousRealm.com/story. If you are not a internet forum type person, 512-298-3913 is the experiencer hotline. Call up, you can leave us a voicemail, and we will use that on air. In this segment, welcome back to the show, Archbishop James Cloud. How are you doing, good sir?
I am doing well. How are you doing?
I am doing fantastic. Getting ready to hop out actually tomorrow morning to the IANS conference, the International Association of Near-Death Studies. I'm heading out to Salt Lake City, Utah to get some interviews from that and see what all's going on that front. That research is so amazing and ongoing. I'm glad to be a part of that. So that's what's new and exciting with me. You just recently had a delivery of an individual through exorcism. How did that go?
That went great. A lot of counseling went into the session with the individual to really hone in on what are the, were the probable causes, origins, and such of the issues going on. And through prayers, counseling, et cetera, you know, we put out the big fires in the property, metaphorically speaking, and now just working on getting all the little hot spots that are still mildly active, doing this and that. But that's not unusual for a property exorcism. On this particular one, I did it over a video session, and it seemed to go really well. So all praise to God.
And you know, the remote prayer, I think, is interesting. It really does show the fact that you don't have to be physically present in order to command. And
correct.
That's pretty interesting.
Yeah.
And we need to do a whole episode on that at some point, because there are some really interesting concepts there to think about when you're talking about deliverance, when you're talking about prayer to begin with. But when you're talking about specifically things like laying on of hands and that kind of stuff, to know that it can be done remotely is really remarkable.
Absolutely. You know, because with God, there is no distance. Mm. In our human minds, we have this idea that, you know, it can't be done unless we're physically there.
Yeah.
You know, nothing can be resolved. Healings can't happen or anything. But that's not the case. You know, our prayers reach heaven, and with God, He's everywhere at once anyway.
Yeah.
So it really doesn't depend on our physical presence. Now, I wouldn't do that with a person that's possessed, because there's a lot of monitoring and other things that have to go on that, you know, just wouldn't be conducive for a video deliverance or exorcism. But as far as a property, it seems to work just fine.
Wow. Phenomenal. And speaking of phenomenal, a couple weeks ago, every once in a while, I will see you post things on social media, and as the Spirit speaks to you, like I said before the show started, mm-hmm. a private conversation, it speaks to you to tell things, and it speaks to me to have people on to tell their things. And when we started talking about the Antichrist, it was one of those, I'd probably had about two or three discussions with people recently regarding Antichrist, prophecies, things like that. And when you started talking about it online, I was like, you know, I really need to have him on to talk about that. So let's really start. I'm going to go ahead and bring up just the definition of Antichrist on the screen.
All right.
But let's start kind of breaking this down a little bit, Father.
Okay.
Exactly where does the teaching of the Antichrist come from? Is there a teaching, I guess, capital T teaching, in the church of an Antichrist or a coming Antichrist?
Oh, absolutely. So you have to differentiate between the spirit of Antichrist and then the actual man of sin, as the Bible calls him, the incarnate Antichrist, the man at the end that is called, you know, the man of sin. And so the spirit of Antichrist, you can read throughout the scriptures, it talks about the spirit of Antichrist is already active in the world and was already active in the world at the time of the writing of the New Testament. So, and really, all Antichrist means is in place of Christ. So it's an alternate version, per se, that folks believe in instead of the risen Christ. It's a very secularized, a very demonic version, and it's in rebellion to the laws of God. So the Antichrist will be, because he's called the man of sin, he will do everything that is against the scriptures, embracing heresies, embracing every sinful flavor of the modern age. And people will love him at first. But the spirit of Antichrist has been around and has permeated the church since the very beginning. So that's the differentiation between the spirit of Antichrist versus the Antichrist.
Okay, and that, I think, is, as you said, a very important differentiation.
Yes.
Let's start getting into then, now that we understand the difference between spirit of the Antichrist and the physical person Antichrist, let's start getting into some of the prophecy regarding the Antichrist and the coming of the Antichrist.
Okay, definitely. The broadest picture that you can paint of the Antichrist, even though there's, you know, small snapshots of him, even through the Old Testament. But the biggest picture that we can get of the Antichrist is found in Revelation chapter 13. And so, would you like me to read the passage for folks?
Please, please.
All right. So Revelation 13, beginning with verse 1. And I saw a beast rising out of the sea with 10 horns and 7 heads, with 10 diadems on its horns and blasphemous names on its heads. And the beast that I saw was like a leopard. Its feet was like a bear's, and its mouth was like a lion's mouth. And to it, the dragon gave his power and his throne and great authority. One of its heads seemed to have a mortal wound, but its mortal wound was healed. And the whole earth marveled as they followed the beast. And they worshiped the dragon, for he had given his authority to the beast. And they worshiped the beast, saying, "Who is like the beast, and who can fight against it?" And the beast was given a mouth, uttering haughty and blasphemous words, and it was allowed to exercise authority for 42 months. It opened its mouth to utter blasphemies against God, blaspheming his name and his dwelling, that is, those who dwell in heaven. And it was allowed to make war on the saints and to overpower them. And authority was given it over every tribe and people and language and nation, and all who dwell on the earth will worship it. Everyone whose name has not been written before the foundation of the world in the book of life of the Lamb who was slain. If anyone has an ear, let him hear. If anyone is to be taken captive, to captivity he goes. If anyone is to be slain with the sword he must be slain. Here is the call for the endurance and faith of the saints. So, in other chapters in Revelation, as well as other snapshots, best way to describe them, of the Antichrist in the Old Testament, as well as in the Gospels and Epistles, is that this 10, you know, 10 nations, 10, well, you can look up on the UN. The UN has currently 10 trade blocks around the earth right now. And that is the kingdom. And the reason why I say that is because the mark of the beast will be a digital ID that all current cash currency is going to be transferred into digital currency. And when the false prophet arises, who is the sidekick of the Antichrist, so Antichrist is the political dynamo, while the false prophet is the spiritual dynamo. The false prophet is the one that will do the miracles, the signs and wonders when he's next to the Antichrist to fool basically the secular world into believing that Antichrist is God. And so, but what the false prophet puts forth is the mark of the beast. And we'll read that in the next chunk. It, you know, he causes all small, you know, small and great, rich and poor, free and slave, to have this mark. Interestingly enough, the World Economic Forum, the Davos Group, and pretty much every country on the face of the earth right now is developing what they call a CBDC, a central bank digital currency. And President Biden, in I believe it was March of this year, signed Executive Order 14067, and you can look it up, any of your listeners can look it up, that mandates the creation of a central bank digital currency that will erase the need for cash, and it's supposed to go into effect in December. It could either be immediate or it could be a phase-in. But the way the language is that from then on, they can track everything a person buys or sells with the digital ID. Tied in with the digital ID, when you look at other resources, and these are from government sources. This is World Economic Forum. This is US.gov. This is, you know, this isn't like some fringe website, you know, that they wear tinfoil hats. And
oh, yeah, no, I've got it up from a law firm right now. President Biden signs executive order signaling a development of United States central bank digital currency and shaping up regulations of digital assets.
And that is exactly why they hired the 87,000 IRS agents. Because of this digital currency that's going to go into effect, they'll need the extra eyes and hands on deck to monitor all the microtransactions that are going on with every person in the United States. Physical cash will be phased out. And I guarantee there'll be some little blurb about, well, you know, physical cash, you can get COVID sick, paper. You can get a virus, and blah, blah, blah. And, you know, they'll frame it. I mean, Klaus Schwab, head of the World Economic Forum, tries to frame their development currently and Agenda 2030 into a one world government. The, you know, they want all nations to submit to unelected officials that will govern, and through a corporation structure, basically. Because when he uses the term stakeholders, what he's actually meaning is corporations. So, and you can go on the World Economic Forum. You can look up Klaus Schwab, the Fourth Industrial Revolution, the Great Reset. You know, and what's funny with the Great Reset is Facebook and other things, Wikipedia will say, oh, this is a conspiracy theory. That no, it's not a friggin' conspiracy theory if it's coming straight from the horse's mouth. So you can see the already the obfuscation, the sidelining, the little poo-pooing of anyone that brings all of this information to the forefront. You know, oh, they're fringe, they're tinfoil hat wearers, even though it's coming from the governments themselves and the UN, the World Economic Forum, Davos Group, BlackRock, everyone else. So this is what the false prophet will bring forth. The problem is with digital ID, it will mesh not only the currencies, but it will combine your medical information, any other identifying information that you have, put it all into basically one ID, and they frame it like this. If your child gets lost, if, you know, you're in an accident and you can't, you know, you're unconscious, you can't do XYZ, or, you know, child is kidnapped, or, I mean, they could dream up any nightmare scenario to scare people, but they'll say, well, we can track where they're at. We'll know where they're at any given time. If you're unconscious, all they have to do is scan your digital ID, and your medical records will come up with your insurance and everything else.
Just like I'm Back to the Future, too.
What is that?
Just like I'm Back to the Future, too.
Yeah.
When they find her passed out in the alley, and they scan her palm, and it tells them exactly who she is and where she lives, and her palm... Yep. Palm print gets her in the front door, everything else.
Yeah, well, Amazon is kind of a spearheader into the little palm readers.
Mm-hmm.
They have, I think it's like 65 stores already in the U.S., and I had some friends saying it was in Texas, too.
Yep. Yeah, they're
pretty
you just much
pay everything
Foods.
With your palm.
Whole Foods is their, is their test bed for all that right now.
Yep. Yep. And, you know, people love it. It's convenient. They don't have to mess around with finding a wallet, their IDs, credit cards, everything's, you just stick your hand over this little scanner and it pops everything up. What this stage is right now is social conditioning for the mark, because it's phasing in all the foundational things that are 100% part of the mark.
Which
not
let's,
saying
let's be clear, the mark is very much a window to the vampire. Like, you have to accept the mark.
You do. But think about this. And so they will know every transaction. I mean, you'll pay all your bills with the digital currency, so all bills will be dumped into the database, the central database.
It will go as far as that's how you will be decentralized voting will go on through that as well.
Sure. I could easily see that. Absolutely. You know, it's all combining everything into one thing. And think about this. So when push comes to shove, they'll say, well, you know, you can't buy or sell unless you do X, Y, or Z. Mm. So it's the perfect way for command and control. I've always told people, when it comes to big government, corporations, and all the hanky crap that goes on behind the scenes, it's always about command and control. How can we get the poor schmucks out on the street to do what we want? Well, if they can't buy or sell unless they behave a certain way, like China's social credit system, which is also part of the fourth industrial revolution to ensure everyone plays by the rules. If they literally own all of the money, own all of the ability for you to just go down to the store and buy a soda or a candy bar, and they know how much it costs, when you bought it, all they have to do, if you misbehave, is just turn you off. And if there is no physical cash going on, you can't buy or sell without that mark. This is exactly what they, you know, I don't even have to use the scripture at this point. This is exactly what the World Economic Forum, UN, Davos Group, and others are saying plainly. It's almost like they're just sitting there rubbing it in everyone's faces going, yeah, this is what's going to happen. And everyone's going to do it, whether they like it or not. And these are unelected people. So,
that. They are appointed people. And now, I'm not going to be the one to say that the UN is ushering in the age of the beast. I won't be the one to say that.
Sure.
However, there are definitely a lot of things popping up. I'll even bring it up right now. The Euphrates has run dry.
Yeah.
And that is a big Bible prophecy.
Yes, it is.
So let's start getting back into the scripture and back into prophecy and some other prophecies that are there regarding the coming of the Antichrist, things like that.
Okay. Yeah. So that was the first beast I read. Let's look at the second beast. And the second beast, you can't talk about Antichrist without also bringing up the spiritual component too, because the two go hand in hand. And so it's the second beast. And this is Revelation 13, beginning with verse 11. Then I saw another beast rising out of the earth. It had two horns like a lamb, and it spoke like a dragon. It exercises all authority of the first beast in its presence and makes the earth and its inhabitants worship the first beast, aka Antichrist, whose mortal wound was healed. It performs great signs, even making fire come down from heaven in front to earth in front of people. And by the signs that it is allowed to work in the presence of the beast, it deceives those who dwell on the earth, telling them to make an image for the beast that was wounded by the sword and yet lived. And it was allowed to give breath to the image of the beast, so that the image of the beast might even speak and might cause those who would not worship the image of the beast to be slain. And it causes all, both small and great, both rich and poor, both free and slave, to be marked on the right hand or the forehead, so that no one can buy or sell unless he has the mark, that is, the name of the beast or the number of its name. This calls for wisdom. Let the one who has understanding calculate the number of the beast. What is the number of a man? And his number is 666. So I'll put this out there for folks. 666 is not the number of Satan. You know, a lot of occultists like to slap 666 like they're, you know, big bad and, oh, I'm a big Satanist. No, you're not.
Yeah.
666 correlates perfectly with Nero Caesar. However, and a lot of theologians will say, well, that's just talking about Nero. That's just, you know, he was just talking about a bad guy that lived around John's time. And
was a persecutor of the Christian faith. All good stuff.
Sure. But then in Revelation, it talks about the beast that was, which would be Nero, is not, because Nero's not around at the time of the writing of Revelation. He had died about 40 years prior.
Yeah.
And then the beast that is to come. So we're given some possibilities about the man of sin, Antichrist himself. He will either be a reincarnation of Nero himself, or he will have the personality, behaviors, and mannerisms of Nero, or it will be simply something, a person that typifies that the same style of Nero in his approach. So there's some possibilities, but it does tie back to Nero. It's just a matter of, well, what's the future beast going to look like?
Yeah.
Will he just look like Nero? Who knows?
And granted, this is the second reference in a row by chapter of the beast having a healed mortal wound on its head. But what does that mean exactly? Is there any deeper reference to that?
Well, theologians for a very long time have given basically one of two answers to that. So this is, we'll open up another topic of discussion, but I'll try to aim it toward the point I'm trying to make first, and then sure. we can divvy back. But the Antichrist will make a 7-year peace treaty between Israel and an Arab confederation. So that 7-year peace treaty is called Daniel's 70th week from the book of Daniel, or more commonly known as the Great Tribulation. The first 3.5 years of that 7-year period, there will be a resemblance of world peace. That, there'll be no wars. Resources will be consolidated, just like a World Economic Forum is doing. That's another reform they're trying to pass, is to take all of the world's resources and put it under one umbrella, them, and ran by corporations. That can't turn out bad in the slightest. No way, you know. but that's their game plan. They lay it all out very clearly what they plan. So there'll be equity, not equality, equity across the board for people. Because then one group owns it, they divvy it out. As long as you play by the rules, you do what they say, then you have food, housing, clothing, etc. So at the midpoint, so this gets into another big area too of prophecy. The third Jewish temple will be rebuilt, either before the 7-year peace treaty or as one of the requirements of the 7-year peace treaty with Israel and the Muslim nations, mostly the Shiites, not the Sunnis. But the Sunnis, you know, they would have a say too. And quite honestly, if anyone looks at the Temple Mount, if the third temple was built next to the Dome of the Rock, it would be a very poetic and encouraging sign to the world that Judaism and Islam can live in peace side by side and be this shining example of peace about mortal enemies to two violent brothers against each other, going all the way back to Isaac and Ishmael, because that's the origins of the two.
Yeah.
Living side by side. And so the Antichrist makes that happen. At the midpoint, Antichrist sets himself up. He walks into the third temple and says, "I'm God, and everyone's going to worship me." This is where it talks about that second beast, the false prophet, setting up an idol or an image of the beast where it can talk and answer questions. People have asked for a very long time, well, how in the heck is he going to make this weird statue and it's going to talk? It just says an image. Look at airports in Japan. They have full-blown 3D holograms that interact, talk with you, do the whole thing. They have other life-size and bigger holograms that
they
people interact with in other ways.
In ancient Greece, man.
Oh, sure. Sure, sure. And they did all that stuff with the steam and everything else, made it look pretty cool. Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah. But you have to look at a lot of these things in just our modern thought and how we view it in the modern era, because they didn't have words for a lot of the things that we have today. I mean, things just didn't exist like they did then. So, you know, St. John, he's on the island of Patmos. He sees an image talking. Well, the false prophet makes everyone worship this image. It's at that midpoint that the mark of the beast is enforced, and you either take it and submit and engage in open Luciferian worship, or you're beheaded. Mm. It's an either or. The phase in part of it is done, because the phase in happens, well, let's be honest, the phase in is happening now. But it will continue until that midpoint of the tribulation, and when the mark of the beast is imposed. And then now you have that choice. You'll either worship this man who claims to be God, or you're going to be beheaded. And if you somehow escape that, all they have to do is turn you off, and now you can't get medicine for your children. You can't get clothing for your loved ones. Yeah. You can't get food. You can't live in a house, renting or buying. If you have debts, they can be called immediately and immediately taken out, like China does already. If you, I forget what it was. It was something so stupid, but it's in China right now. It's like if you chew bubble gum, or no, if you smoke in a non-smoking designated place, you're fined $500, and they take it immediately out of your account. There's no judge, no jury. Well, you did that. Well, there's $500 out of your account. It's the exact same concept.
Wow.
And the World Economic Forum is basing what they plan to do on the social credit system that's currently in China. That's why China is getting all of these kickbacks and all of these, oh, isn't China wonderful? You know, hey, it's okay. They don't have the freedom. Hey, they're so orderly and organized and blah, blah, blah. This is what's going down. And anyone can look any of this up. And that's, I mean, it's a beautiful thing. One, because it pulls it out of the realm of fringe. It pulls it out of the realm of speculation. Literally, we're living in an age where you can look at biblical prophecy and turn on the evening news, and they go hand in hand. So no longer is this some esoteric allegory, metaphor, like a lot of theologians have done for so long with the Book of Revelation. Mm. Now, it's right. It's lit. We, you, me, and your listeners are living prophecy right now. And that should get people's attention. The other thing about the false prophet is when you read in verse 11 and 12 and 13 of chapter 13, the second beast has the horns of a lamb. So this second beast will have a significant spiritual following already to be the false prophet. He will be quote unquote Christian. He'll be overseeing a very powerful demographic that it is even respected amongst the other religions for this Christian leader, quote unquote. The false prophet looks like the lamb, but he uses the words of the dragon. He may look holy. He may look like he's got his act together and may very well sound logical, special, great to the listeners. But the words he speaks are nothing but lies and deceptions because he speaks with the mouth of the dragon, which is Lucifer. So there's only one person, one position that actually would fit with that in Judeo-Christianity, and that's a pope. We've already seen the deterioration of the Roman Catholic Church since the Second Vatican Council. I mean, you have some severe deteriorations within the church. I'm not saying it's Francis. It could very well be his successor, though, because Francis has laid some interesting groundwork that would make it happen, including like the Pachamama and some other things being put on the altar of St. Peter's and blessed and everything else. And this is a pagan fertility deity. I mean, if that's not heresy, I'm not sure how one would else clarify and classify heresy.
Yeah.
So that would be a definite, strong, probably 99% chance candidate for who the false prophet will be, because they do have that both spiritual power, but they also have a big economic base to work with. And they have the Knights of Malta, which are basically the Vatican spies in most of the world governments. So you got that. Then Antichrist, when he comes on the scene, he'll be a big peacemaker. He'll be, you know, this man that people are enamored with. They'll think, my goodness, I've never heard this man speak of such things. He can bring peace to the Middle East. He brings peace amongst other nations. He comes, and the scriptures make it clear, this man is not, as the scriptures say, a king, but he's brought to power by kings. So he is kind of behind the scenes. He's not an elected leader, but the elected leaders of the world push him to the forefront because he's such a master diplomat. And because he's a, think of him like a peacemaker, a master planner. They love him. The people think he's the best thing since sliced bread. And he doesn't show his true nature until that midpoint of the tribulation. So up until that point, people are, you know, buying on. He's selling soft selling the mark of the beast. He's soft selling the world government. He's soft selling all of this other stuff. At the midpoint, the soft sell's done. And now he's like, hey, I'm God. And also, guess what? I'm also Lucifer. Have fun with that. And you're going to worship me. And if you don't, bye-bye. So that's, and like I said earlier, the third Jewish temple will be rebuilt. Look up the templeinstitute.org. If you do not think the third temple is ready to go.
I just had them up on screen a minute ago.
Hey, there you go, buddy. They have all of the furniture, all the implements, even a reproduction of the Ark of the Covenant ready to rock. And I saw a few years ago that they already had the third temple built, but just in modular form, so that when they get the go-ahead, they can have it built within 3 to 6 months. So that's,
wow,
that piece is already ready to go too. Literally, my friend and listeners, we are living prophecy. And that is zero exaggeration. All you have to do is look it up for yourself. All of the evidence, all of the game plans, everything is sitting out in the open, but you will not hear the corporate media talking about any of it, other than trying to soft sell it.
Mm.
So that's how that rolls. Yeah. Good times. Good times are had by all, you know.
Yeah.
I try to smile about it, because if I didn't, I'd be pulling out my hair and gnashing my teeth at the audacity.
Yeah. And, you know, there's a lot when it comes to this, Father. And granted, it might be a lot for a lot of people to swallow, might be a lot for a lot of people to believe in.
Sure.
However, whether or not you believe in the Antichrist, what you can believe in is the executive order that the good father was talking about. That is a real thing. You can believe in the Temple Institute trying to rebuild the third temple. That is a real thing. And they say in their documentation that they are attempting to rebuild the third temple to bring about the prophecies of the third temple. So, these things are out there.
And I will add to that, there is a theological reason behind why Iran wants to get a nuke and basically cause an Armageddon, a small Armageddon, not the Armageddon, but chaos. It is because in the Shiite Muslim belief, they believe that their Mahdi, M-A-H-D-I, will arise, which is their Messiah, will arise basically in the crucible of war at the end of the age. And Iran wants this Messiah to come to the forefront. Thus, they want to attack Israel. Israel is currently looking for Messiah, the Jews, as a physical king that will bring peace to the land of Israel. There is no reason not to think that the Antichrist will fulfill both roles. Being a big peacemaker, he'll be accepted by Islam as Mahdi. He'll be accepted by the Jews as Messiah. And it comes together in this, you know, if God wasn't in the plan, you know, it'd be serendipity to the nth level. But this is what this is the reality that's going on right now. The geopolitical issues in the Middle East, that's what it's all about. And if you do any research in Judaism and talk with the rabbis, they will say they're on the precipice of the Gog-Magog war. Some even say they're already in it because of the Jews in Ukraine with Russia, you know, Gog-Magog.
Yep.
And Israel funding Ukraine. They know that the rise of Messiah is imminent. And they even rabbis came out, I think it was 2 years ago, saying they've already had discussions with Messiah. They're just waiting for him to come out of the wings so they, the Sanhedrin can anoint him the king of Israel and bring peace. Now, if that doesn't... folks got to know the Sanhedrin didn't exist for almost 2,000 years.
Yeah.
It did not exist because the Jews were dispersed amongst all the nations. The Sanhedrin ceased to exist in 70 AD at the sacking of Jerusalem under Vespasian. The sacking of Jerusalem. They were dispersed. After Israel became a nation in 1948, the Sanhedrin weren't back yet. In, I think it was mid-90s, if memory serves, maybe even closer to our date than that, the Sanhedrin was reformed. They have the ashes of the red heifer to consecrate the temple now. They have all the furniture and implements. They have the oil of anointing, the special oil of anointing that the recipe was lost for 2,000 years. They now rediscovered it magically. They have the oil of anointing to anoint the king of Israel.
Wow.
It doesn't get any more real than this.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, I guess before we let you go, Father, the real question is, these are all culminations of prophecy. Typically with prophecy, there's a way out.
There is a way out. Absolutely.
What's our way out? How can we stop
the short answer?
Stop it? Oh, okay.
The short answer is put your faith in Christ. Because the good thing is, with all of the judgments, when you read further in Revelation, you have the trumpet judgments and the bowl judgments. And really, it revolves around a dual extinction level event asteroid impact. When you look at the data, what it's actually talking about is an asteroid impact. And it's no coincidence. Multiple asteroids are just magically showing up at greater numbers as we go further along. Could even be precursor asteroids for the big boys that are prophesied in Revelation. But for those that put their faith in Christ, the scripture tells us we are not under the wrath of God. Therefore, either we're taken before that last half of the 7-year period, because that's when the judgments and it gets really crap-tacular. I'll just be blunt.
It gets a little
rough. That all happens. Yeah, it'll be rough. That's the easiest way. I mean, sure, absolutely.
That's the PC way to put it. It's going to be rough.
But I'm not very PC. I'm kind of a straight shooter. But putting our faith in Christ, one of two things will happen. Either we're taken out before the wrath. Because in, I believe it's chapter 11, it speaks about an angel taking a sickle, reaping the wheat off the earth. Then a second angel follows and it shoots out the wine press of the wrath of God. So believers are the wheat. I mean, that's throughout the scripture. The symbology is tight. So that were either taken then, or the Jews are actually given a place of safety to run once they realize who Antichrist is. The Old Testament calls it the pens of Bozra. We understand and know it under the name Petra in Jordan as the place of safety. And if memory serves, Israel currently has a treaty with Jordan to go exactly there if Israel ever needs a way to escape.
Wow. Wow.
Yep. That's about all you can say these days. For years, I sat here and I wondered, well, how is this all going to come together? What will XYZ look like? Well, you know, what will this? And then these things just start dropping. And I sit back and I'm staggered. And I'm thinking, oh, good Lord, it is coming. And there's nothing anyone can do to stop it. But before I forget, you mentioned the mortal wound.
Yes.
It's commonly believed that the Antichrist, there will be an assassination attempt on him. You know, you'll have patriots and others that don't want to take the mark that are going to go after Antichrist and assassinate him. But it also says after a while, the wound is healed, he comes back to life, a resurrection, if you will. And that's when everyone worships him and thinks he's best thing since sliced bread. And they say, well, he resurrected. The only one that ever did it was Christ. So he must be God. And then the game is on.
All right. Well, hopefully we as a humanity, we as a society can curb this, can recognize these things, can come to a point of understanding of all of this from like you were saying, the Arabic side, the Jewish side, the mm-hmm. Christian side. We all claim Abraham as a spiritual father. It all roots
absolutely
there. So the fact that it's going to involve all three is not really rocket math. Before we let you go, let everybody know where they can go to pick up your book, Walking with Ghosts, where they can go to contact you if they need a clearing of their property, if they need an exorcism, anything like that, good father.
Sure. So my regular Facebook page is, you know, I invite folks to always contact me, send me a private message or whatnot. Sometimes it takes me a little while to see him. But if we're not already friends on Facebook, but if we're not, just have patience. I will answer any questions, comments, or tomatoes that are thrown my way. And then as far as the book goes, it's on Amazon. You just type in the full title of it. It'll dump right into it. And if you want to read some of the experiences I've grown up with, the UFO UAP encounters, the exorcisms, my family's history with paranormal issues, and my probably pathetic attempt to explain it all with scripture. You know, I try my best. I'm as human as anyone else. I'm not the, you know, sum total of all knowledge, but I do my best to explain step by step what each piece means.
It is a great book, and your wealth of knowledge on these topics is great. I want to thank you for always coming on, sharing it unabashedly, the truth that you have to share, and such an incredible topic tonight. Thank you so much for your time, as always.
Oh, you're very welcome.
And you actually have a deliverance with somebody coming up. So everybody make sure to give your intentions of support to the good father as he goes out there and battles for the best.
And I appreciate it.
Well, thank you so much for your time this evening. We're going to go ahead and let you go and
hop
on out to commercial break. While you are online checking out everything from the Good Father, make sure to stop on by CuriousRealm.com. And, of course, make sure to check out IANS, the International Association for Near-Death Studies. I will be hopping out to that conference tomorrow morning in Salt Lake. We will be having coverage from that, interviews from researchers in the field, all that kind of good stuff coming up soon. Right after these messages, folks, we will be talking with Ryan Edwards, cryptozoologist and author of the book Cryptids of the World, about cryptids of the world, cryptids that actively cross over cultural barriers, geologic barriers. So all that and so much more when we get back right after these messages. With the rise in attention to the health benefits of cannabis and cannabinoids, including CBD, True Hemp Science has become one of the premier providers of full-spectrum CBD and CBD-related products. Using a proprietary spagyric process, True Hemp Science extracts maximum benefit from the whole hemp plant. Buds, leaves, stems, seeds, even roots. Every part of the plant is used and then reused to formulate a rich, complex profile of CBD, CBD derivatives, and terpenes guaranteed to provide the relief and benefits you need daily. Visit TrueHempScience.com to experience the best CBD oils, edibles, and topicals on the market today. And use code CURIOUS7 to save 7% off your entire purchase of $50 or more and get 2 25-milligram CBD cookies or brownies free. That website again is TrueHempScience.com and the code is CURIOUS7. Curious Realm Podcast is your source for the latest and greatest news and events in the world of the paranormal, esoteric, and forbidden knowledge. And there's no better way to spark the conversation than with items from the Curious Realm store. Choose from fan favorites like hoodies, mouse pads, coffee mugs, and more. Buy books and items from your favorite Curious Realm guests. Get your hands on the latest gear for paranormal investigations and experiments we discuss on the show. Open your web browser and stop on by the Curious Realm store at CuriousRealm.com/store to buy the latest Curious Realm wear and out-of-this-world gifts for yourself, your family, or a mind that you want to open. That website again is CuriousRealm.com/store. Have you considered starting a podcast? Looking for a way to make your business a voice of authority in an industry? Then Podcast Cadet is the solution for you. Whether starting a podcast for yourself, your brand, business, school, church, or just plain fun, Podcast Cadet is here to help you navigate the waters of the podcast industry. Specializing in one-on-one consultation and training with industry professionals in fields ranging from podcast technology and editing to distribution, monetization, and even social media strategies, Podcast Cadet tailors their services to the specific needs of you and your podcast. Do you already have a podcast and trying to find ways to engage and grow your audience? Sign up for your Podcast Cadet audit today and let us help you explore new and exciting ways to leverage your content and elevate your podcast brand to whole new levels. From consultation and workshops to affordable podcast production and maintenance packages, Podcast Cadet is your one-stop shop for everything podcast-related on the internet. Visit PodcastCadet.com today to sign up for your consultation or training, and use code CURIOUS20 to save 20% off your entire purchase. That website again is PodcastCadet.com. Welcome back, everybody. Thank you so much to our sponsors out there, especially our long-going sponsor, our good friends here in town, Truhemp Science. Truhemp Science is your source for some of the most amazing CBD product out there, folks. I have been using, I found Christopher Lynch, the owner and creator of Truhemp Science, at a farmer's market here in Austin, Texas. His was probably one of the third or fourth CBD oils that I tried after being recommended by my doctor. And I travel the country as an AV technician. I've been to a lot of dispensaries. Can't say that I have found a CBD product as good as Truhemp Science anywhere in the country, despite my trying. They are one of the only products out there with an actual terpene profile, a true spigyric alchemical process to harvest every bit of goodness out of every part of the plant. Stop on by and check them out. TrueHempScience.com is the website. Of course, our good friends at WebWorks Wireless, they are our source for our website live streams, all of our on-location live feeds from things like Texas Bigfoot Convention, stuff like that. So stop on by and check them out, folks. WebWorksWireless.com is their website. And of course, our good friend and guest, the amazing Dr. Kimberly McGeorge from The Secret of Everything, secretofeverything.com. She is your source for alternative health, frequency healing, and consciousness expansion exercises. While you're online checking all that out, make sure to stop on by Curious Realm. CuriousRealm.com/story is where you can go to share your story now. If you have a cryptid encounter with any cryptid, Bigfoot, Loch Ness Monster, Thunderbirds, Little People, what have you, stop on by, share it. CuriousRealm.com/story is the website page to visit. There you can share not only your name, if you like, you can keep it anonymous, but you can share what type of experience you're sharing, a paranormal experience, a witness episode. If you're a targeted individual, you can share with us your story, any pictures or supporting evidence you have. And next time that we have somebody on the show talking about that topic, we will share your story on air and pose it to the professionals, pose it to the investigators, and see how much deeper down the rabbit hole of knowledge we can take you and maybe help find an explanation for your experience. While you're online checking all that out, make sure to stop on by YouTube and subscribe to the channel of our guest in this segment, Ryan Edwards, The Cryptid Chronicles. I had an opportunity to meet Ryan I'm trying to remember exactly which show it was, and if I'm not mistaken, it was the Southeast Texas Bigfoot Festival in Mineola. Ryan, welcome back to the show. How are you doing this evening, my friend?
I'm doing good. It's always a pleasure to be here.
Absolutely, man. We had a great time out there at the Southeast Texas Bigfoot Festival. It was a heck of a time out in Mineola. It was great meeting folks like yourself. Jason McClelland, who's been on the show since, Of course, seeing people like Daniel Alan Jones, always great. It was fantastic. I went out this last weekend for my birthday to visit the Wonderland UFO Festival at Wonderland Park in San Antonio, and ran into Ryan. I was like, hey, why don't you come on the show this week? So, yeah, welcome back, my friend.
Of course. It's always good to be here. It's nice seeing you at the festival. I wasn't expecting to see you at the little convention at the mall, because I knew it was kind of a small thing, so I wasn't expecting a lot of big names there like yourself.
Oh, well, thank you. Thank you. Even to be considered a big name. it's one of those that it was right down the road. Daniel Alan Jones was speaking. I was really upset that I didn't get to stay for his. I've got a kid. He was in tow and starting to get a little ornery after being up most of the day. So, we had to scoot out a little bit early, but sounded like quite a few people made a showing. Sounded like they had a good turnout for the day. So, glad to hear that for them, and hope to be involved with them next year. I spoke with them on my way out the door to talk to them about possibly coming out and doing the live stream thing next year, all that kind of stuff. So, yeah. Well, let's get into it. You are the author of the book Cryptids of the World, which I happened to pick up when I was at the festival there in Mineola. Let's start talking a little bit about the menagerie of cryptids that are around the world, specifically ones that seem to have tropes that follow across the world. Of course, there's Sasquatch, and we know that there are numerous entities of Sasquatch across the world, or at least Sasquatch-type creatures. We don't know that it's Sasquatch because, well, we got to prove Sasquatch first. Let's start talking about a couple of others that are out there that kind of cross cultural barriers and cross barriers literally geographically, Ryan.
Yes. Like, for instance, with, like Sasquatch-like creatures, these, relic hominoids of people like, Dr. Belgium likes to call these creatures. And so there's really hominins and really hominids, because we aren't for sure what these creatures are. They could be some type of unevolved human, like a Homo floresiensis or Homo erectus, or they could be a derived primate, like a some type of bipedal gorilla or like Gigantopithecus. And when you look at these sightings, you have a peculiar correlation, because you have, let's just say, for instance, Sasquatch here in North America, you have a large bipedal primate, human-like, it's humanoid at least, probably 6 to 9 feet tall, different hair colors, things like that. And then you have these same characteristics seen across the world. You have, of course, the Yeti of the Himalayas. These creatures seem to be maybe, there's different, almost suborders of Yeti. You have the Tilima, which is believed to be maybe 5 to 6 feet tall. The Nyamo, which is believed to be 8 to almost even 12 feet tall. And you have all these different characteristics.
Oh, wow.
You have, of course, the Maori of Australia and the Yeren of China. But also you have little unknown creatures. Like, not a lot of people realize there are Bigfoot-like creatures supposedly seen in Europe and the UK. You have the wood mouse or the green man legends from there. And even in Africa, there's stories of the Gugwe, a small human-like creature, maybe 5 to 4 feet tall, that's covered in hair. But even the Muhalu of Western Africa, which is believed to be almost like a giant hair-covered human. And there's these legends that persist throughout multiple cultures across the world.
Yeah, precisely. And it's interesting, the fact that these sightings do occur across the world, and that the descriptions, not only the descriptions in recent times, but the descriptions of indigenous cultures are so similar. It's pretty remarkable. And to think that, you know, of course there was the, you yourself are a history teacher, Ryan. There was the idea of the Lamb Bridge that led from the Siberian Peninsula over to America. And maybe that's how, you know, the North American people came over from that area, things like that. There are all kinds of, even the theory of Pangaea and the fact that at one point all of the continents were connected and then a cataclysm drove them apart, tectonic cataclysm. So there are a few working hypotheses out there that might explain this. However, there's more than one cryptid that crosses these geographic and cultural barriers. One example that hops to mind immediately is the chupacabra. Both of us living here in Texas, there is kind of a Texas version of the chupacabra, which is much more of a canid-like animal from what we've seen so far. And then there is the utterly otherworldly traditional chupacabra from Puerto Rico, things like that. So let's get into that for a minute.
Of course. Like with the chupacabra, one thing I look at with cryptids is like nomenclature. Well, how do they get their names? So chupacabra in Spanish, of course, means goat sucker. And this is a point me and my buddy King Gerhard talk about a lot, that chupacabra is describing a behavior set. It's not exactly describing a particular creature. It's just describing some type of vampiric creature that can suck blood out of goats, chickens, even cattle at most times. And usually there are sightings that correlate to these peculiar predations. But the description of these creatures vary widely. Of course, in the 1990s, you had some of the first chupacabra sightings. The original name was called the Vampiro de Moco. There was a city called Moco down in Puerto Rico that supposedly strange animal sightings were occurring with strange animal deaths. And then one woman, Madeline Tolentino, saw a peculiar creature walking down her street. She described a human-like animal, almost like kangaroo-like, with spines on its back and a head, almost like a, when you think of like E.T. or like a gray alien, that style of head, but with spikes running down its back, and there are even signs of this creature having wings. So you have this combined characteristics of different creatures. And then, of course, you have here in Texas, you have what's called a Texas blue dog. Back in the early 2000s, a woman named Phyllis Canyon had a stuffed version of this creature, a hairless canine with fiercely black and even bluish skin with peculiar notches on its back, and this creature supposedly fed on the blood of chickens and goats and local livestock. Now, of course, when these killings were being first reported, the local people started calling this creature, whatever killed this creature was chupacabra. It was chupacabra. Because the name was already in the cultural ideas. It was already in the nomenclature.
The sightings here in Texas originally happened right down near the border, things like that. So that was already in the cultural memory. That was already in the cultural nomenclature. So it just stuck.
Yeah. And like with these cryptids, you have to worry about like, how is the cryptid seen in the cultural zeitgeist, with chupacabra? Like, I remember back when I was a child, I used to watch like Scooby-Doo as a kid. And there was a particular movie about the chupacabra. And they go down, and you see the description. In the movie, they say, well, it's a Bigfoot of Mexico. And as a cryptozoologist, we know that's very inaccurate. Because they're describing a different name for a different creature. And you have to wonder how can the characteristics and behaviors that be applied to multiple creatures. Like, of course, the chupacabra seen in Puerto Rico in the 90s cannot be the same chupacabra seen here in Texas. It's two different creatures, it's under the same name.
Yeah, yeah. Exactly. And once again, the name was hijacked because of the cultural memory of similar situations. Not necessarily sighting of a similar creature, but the situations surrounding the dead chickens, things like that, is what culturally brought to mind the name Chupacabra in the area, which once again, I just had up on screen an image of the actual Chupacabra from Puerto Rico, where things started, stuff like that, where it is a bipedal creature that's almost reptilian looking, things like that, as opposed to the Texas Chupacabra, the blue dog, as mentioned a little while ago. And you can see the vast difference, folks. The traditional Chupacabra is much more in the realm of sci-fi.
And actually, interesting fact there is that some people believe it might originally have from sci-fi, because the woman that originally described this creature, Madeline Sorrentino, she said the day before she watched that, she watched the movie Species. And of course, Species has an alien in it that's very similar to what she described.
Yes.
So Spinney believes she might be, her fear or her perception might be causing her to believe she saw that creature in real life, or she put those characteristics on another type of animal she saw.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And, you know, great movie. Don't get me wrong. But we really do. And that's something that King Gerhardt speaks about regularly in his talks, is the hijacking of our brains by pop culture and by subculture like that, you know?
Yeah.
And we really do have to be careful whenever we are witnessing things, whenever we see things. I mean, I'm one that I will always say and follow that Carl Sagan aspect of great claims require great evidence, you know? And I have no problem dismissing 95% of everything. But it's that 5%, Ryan, that's really out there. And you know, it's one of those, like, a prime example. I have followed the field and the study of remote viewing for 20 years of my life. Until I went to the International Remote Viewing Association convention a few months ago and interviewed, like, the people who founded the concept of remote viewing. Every one of these dudes was a letter PhD holding physicist. So there's got to be something to it. Either that or all these physicists are just whack jobs.
And that's even more unlikely than.
Yeah.
If there's nothing to it.
Yeah. Yeah. Precisely. You know, and yeah, it's out of the paranormal. I think that remote viewing has been the most studied as far as, really, really deep research and monetary funds and government monetary funds being put into it. Now there are a lot of people out there, Ryan, especially when it comes to, let's kind of start crossing the barriers here of cryptids themselves and the paranormal and conspiracy theory. Now I am a big proponent of cryptids, cryptid species, things like that. These exist. We discovered 500 new species during a pandemic, you know? So imagine what we actually discover every year when scientists are out in the field. So the fact that cryptids exist, I don't think is in question, at least not for me. But what do you think of, and what do you make research-wise of the hypotheses of paranormal sources of cryptids, like Chupacabra, like Bigfoot using portals, things like that? Where do you come down on that on that topic, because there's a lot of crossover between those communities, you know, and there's a lot of people who vehemently believe one way or the other.
Yes. With me, I come at least cryptozoology with very much a ecological, biological, zoological perspective. I believe, well, at least 70 to 80% of these creatures are evolved and have adapted are truly physical creatures. But it's that other percent, that other 15 to 20% that you have to worry about. And that is what I like to call, well, paracryptozoology. The more outlandish creatures I've seen around the world. Like, say for instance, like Goatman or Dogman or flying humanoids. These creatures are describing either behavioral or morphological details that do not have precedence within the natural world. Like with Goatman, we wouldn't see a bipedal ungulate. And with flying humanoids, we don't see vertebrates with six limbs. That's a entomological the description from insects. So with these creatures, I wonder if they are some type of other origin. What that origin is, I am not sure. It could be something paranormal, extraterrestrial, from another dimension, another plane of reality. What it is, I'm not sure. That's just not where my data goes to.
Yeah.
But the rest of these creatures, I believe, have a precedent within the natural world and or are prehistoric survivors from another age and just have been able to persist into the modern times.
And that's a really, really great way to put that, especially whenever you look at ethnocryptozoology, whenever you start looking at creatures that have been spoken about by cultures for hundreds, sometimes thousands of years. You know, the stories of, I mean, prime example is the Aborigines in Australia. They probably have the longest unbroken oral tradition in humanity. And they've spoken about the Yowie since the beginning. You know, when you go to the American Southwest, the stories of the giants that live in the caves, the ant men, things like that. Even Skinwalker, that kind of stuff. These are stories that have been with them for hundreds and hundreds of years. And we are just now hipping to them, so to speak.
Yes, and it's like, for instance, the Aborigines that you used, like, their whole history goes far back that they reference creatures that aren't even in existence anymore. They talk about the Thylacine and Thylacosylus. Large marsupials that went extinct during the Pleistocene. They even reference large goanna-like lizards, which of course we now know as Megalania. So these old history and even cultural memories go back most likely to 30 to 40,000 years ago. And of course with the Yowie descriptions, you have to wonder if they also reference some type of prehistoric creature. And even with like the Aborigines here in North America, the North American First Nations, sometimes they describe prehistoric creatures. For instance, the Ojibwe, Native American case, speak of the stiff-legged beaver, which they describe a creature that was giant, with really stiff legs, a thick body, and a weird little thing that came out of its head, and with two giant horns that came out of its face. What they're referencing is a mastodon or a mammoth. And you have to wonder, how are these people, how are they having a cultural memory that can go back tens of thousands of years? And it's still persisting into the modern day.
Yeah.
And like, even with the Ojibwe, they even have the Sabe, or like, it's a Bigfoot.
Yeah, precisely. And even the tribes of the Congo that describe dinosaurs. You know, not necessarily that those are cryptids or cryptid species, but they're definitely things that that people have talked about for a long, long time, you know?
Yes. And like with particularly the living dinosaur phenomena, it's very interesting because there are certain characteristics that show what you would call a cultural anachronism. If you look at when the first the Europeans went into Africa and they started coming back with stories of like the Mokema Bembe or Emile Natoka or Kangamoto, they're describing dinosaurs and what we would think about them during the Victorian era. They describe tail dragging or large sluggish reptiles that would just live in the swamp. And now, thanks to paleontology, we know this is inaccurate. And so the Mokema Bembe and all these other creatures, they're describing a creature really truly never truly existed. And like even with the living pterosaur phenomena, they describe creatures with leathery wings and almost dragon-like. And we now know that pterosaurs were covered in pycnofibers. They wouldn't look like they were covered in hair or feathers. Their wings were rounded. Their crests were smaller than they were. They didn't really have large tails. But eyewitnesses describe a very different creature. So are these living survivors of somehow pterosaurs that may have adapted and evolved for 65 million years? Or is it something else, like a misidentification, and how, like, for instance, with eyewitnesses of modern day, they describe, like, pterosaurs and dinosaurs of what they would have seen in Jurassic Park, and not what we now know they look like in the fossil record.
Yeah. Yeah. And once again, we as people tend to, especially in a modern age, tend to cross these tropes over. A prime example, my son has just started being afraid. He's like 5 years old. You got to meet him the other day. He has just started being afraid. And what he's afraid of is his toys coming to life at night. Come to find out.
Ever show him a Toy Story.
Oh, no. The thing is, he's watched Toy Story since he was a kid. He's got all the Toy Story toys. That's not where it came from. There was this show like Masha and the Bear that he found on Netflix or something like that, which is a bunch of Russian fairy tales that have been transformed into animation. Wicked cool. And I found the one the other day where the little kids' toys come alive at night. And you know, hey, you want to talk about culturally? Like, yeah, culturally, stories and campfire stories and stories that we tell children at night are totally different, you know? So, yeah, this trope popped into his mind, and now it's crossed over into his reality. So, yeah. There's the example that I'm giving, and it's very easy for us, even as grown-ups, to do the same thing, you know, for us to see a movie and akin something that we see to it.
Yes, like it. Well, one thing I bring up is how does perception alter reality? Like if someone has a preconceived notion of an existence of a being, whether it's some type of creature or deity or anything like that, they presume to see that creature or being within the reality. It's like if someone is really into spiritualism or like ghost hunting, it's a possibility that if they feel any breeze in a room, oh, that's a ghost.
Yeah.
Or if they're a Bigfoot researcher, if they hear some type of weird sound in the woods, oh, that was a Bigfoot. They have that.
I used to do some paranormal investigation, and some of the things that I see are a little iffy to me. Like, I don't mind you bringing a recorder into the room. Cool.
Yeah.
But when you go around and you start asking questions and things like that, number one, you're inviting something that maybe you shouldn't be inviting. Number two, you are setting up psychologically for the expectation to hear something afterward.
Yeah. And that's one thing that people don't realize. It's like you're expecting a response. So if you don't get a response, you're not even meaning to do it, but you'll make up a response.
Yes.
And that's just not, it's not on, intentionally you're trying to hoax someone or anything like that. That's how the human brain works.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And it's, you know, it can be a great thing, but when you're looking for evidence, proof, it's not necessarily the best thing that you want. And you know, that's one reason why typically, you don't look at pictures right after you get home from something like that. You give it a day or so, you know, you might transfer footage, something like that, from your cameras or devices, but you don't start rifling through pictures. The experience is still too fresh, you know? You kind of have to have that separation to where whenever you come in and you start looking at stuff, that you aren't still colored by the experience of being there.
Yeah. It's like, if you talk to an eyewitness of maybe like a cryptid occurrence, if you can get them within like, I don't know, hours of the occurrence, that's great. But with me, I always try to talk to them a couple of days later. Like, okay,
yeah,
what do you think you saw now? And see if that, even adrenaline in the body can alter what they saw.
Oh,
like, of course, humans, we always, like with size, we're very bad at size information unless you are a trained observer.
Yeah.
And many times, thanks to fear, we make something that's 6 feet tall, 8 feet tall, or something that's 5 feet tall, 7 foot tall. That's just how our brains work.
Yeah, especially without a nearby frame of reference or anything like that. It can be hard to make those associations and to remember those details, especially in an adrenalized moment. And that is something that we have talked about regularly on this show, whether it's UFO experience, paranormal experience, what have you. That is a stealing moment. And one of those moments that a lot of people are like, oh, why don't we have good pictures of Bigfoot? Well, you may be so into the experience or so wowed by the experience or even a UFO or a spirit or an orb or whatever that you may not even have the presence of mind to grab your phone and turn on a camera.
Yeah.
You know? You may just be so jaw dropped and awed, that you can't move. Some people akin it to just being frozen in fear, even though they're not afraid.
Yes. Like, I'll give you an instance of that. Actually, that happened to me recently. I was here in town in San Antonio, and it was just one night. I was waiting for my cousin at like a hotel or something like that. And two or three coyotes crossed the street in front of me, and this is the middle of town. And I was shocked because I was like, "Are those cats? No, those are way bigger than cats. Those are coyotes." And I later on, once they moved on, I was like, "I should have taken a picture. I should have taken a picture, so I have evidence I just saw a coyote in the middle of town."
Yeah.
But you don't have that frame of reference when the occurrence is happening because you're in the moment.
Yeah.
You're not thinking about your camera phone or something like that. Even though your camera is literally on your phone, you don't think about it.
Yeah, precisely. You get wrapped up in it, and it's kind of the almost the same effect that happens whenever you are in such a familiar, like whenever you're driving home, and you're just in a zone. You know, a lot of the times it's the same thing as that, where you're almost in a hypnotic state because you're just so wowed by it. So it'll be interesting. What do you think it will take, Ryan, for, I guess, for cryptids to be accepted by mainstream?
With me, I would believe it's hopefully take maybe the discovery of a large unknown species of a cryptid that has been studied in the past. Whether it be, of course, Sasquatch or something like the Orangutan Deck or Thunderbirds. I'm hoping maybe with one discovery, people will realize okay, if there's one cryptid, one large unknown primate or bird or sea creature, what else could there be? But with me, I believe there's a lot of cultural changes that will have to occur.
Oh, we're losing you a little bit there, bud.
Good right here?
Yeah, there we go.
Gotcha. Sorry. There's people within academia that will always say, well, there's no such thing as Bigfoot, there's no such thing as UFOs, there's no such thing as ghosts, because their paradigms have not been shifted. If they leave, there has to be a shift within just ideas and how people take evidence. But in the future, they'll hopefully make the killings of these creatures and for them to be accepted. So one thing I believe will happen one day, for zoology especially, is for people not to see it as just a paranormal research or some sort of a full-team paranormal study. It should be classified as a zoological study, because a lot of people in this field use field research that has been vetted by experts, true zoological and biological studies, DNA evidence, evidence that true, well, quote unquote, true scientists would use.
Yeah.
So if we can see cryptozoology as just a different aspect of maybe zoology, maybe like the first step to a discovery of a creature, then maybe it would get these, hopefully, viewpoints and vision upon it that it deserves. Because, of course, when you, like, I'm okay with, like, the UFO phenomena and paranormal and all that, but sometimes it can muddy up the water, especially with research like cryptozoology.
Oh, absolutely.
You have the people that are like, oh, we haven't discovered Bigfoot yet. Oh, it has to be from the UFO. Oh, it has to be paranormal. It's like you're trying to solve one mystery with another, and you can't get any answers with that type of viewpoint.
Well, yeah. I mean, it really is the fact of if you're trying to do scientific research, scientific study, you really do need to get that. There's white light, which is great, and then there's laser light, where all those same spectrums are focused into one beam. It's very intense. You tend to get a lot done with one. A shotgun approach to research does not help things. And like you said, there's nothing against anybody. I have nothing against anyone who holds the belief of paranormal and cryptids together, tied together. I got no problem with it. But when you're talking about research, when you're talking about trying to get ethnozoologists, things like that involved, biologists, people who study animal strides, that kind of stuff, you got to let all that go by the wayside, and you got to be able to just let them live in the world that they are comfortable in and hopefully make the discoveries that we need. You know, I think much like you were saying, some of this other can be very distractive to the cause sometimes.
Yes, it's like
I won't say destructive, but distractive.
Yes, like I love the sharing information and new perspectives.
Oh yeah.
But sometimes if you add too many perspectives, the first one is. Third one that might be true can get muddied up. And even like how I always put it, a PhD or a doctorate a professor probably won't get into like cryptozoology while people are saying Bigfoot's from the UFO. I kind of find it lucky that we got someone like Dr. Belgium in this field in the first place, because that's someone that was able to analyze the evidence and come at it from a scientific perspective. Because I believe this discovery of these creatures would have to come from science, not from some type of belief set or paranormal study, but from the biological sciences.
Yeah.
And I believe, like with cryptozoology especially, you need that type of background. Well, not necessarily need it, but it's very, very helpful to know how to collect evidence, to know how to look for yeah. like what could this creature be? Like, for instance, with myself, with every cryptid I research, I don't come at it like, okay, just here's some sightings, here's some possible track finds. Okay, what's next? I come at it from a, okay, this is a creature. It had to come from somewhere. Every animal you look around you has a natural history. It's morphology, it's behavior, it's ecology, all originated from something. So I believe the same thing should be applied to these cryptids, whether it's Bigfoot or Thunderbirds or, heck, even the Dogman phenomena. They have to be here for a reason, and if they aren't, they would be extinct. So if they don't fit in the worldview ecology and zoology, they have to come from some other origin, whether if this is paranormal or genetic manipulation, we aren't for sure. But every cryptid should have some type of origin, because that's how natural species work. And if they don't, this could show a more of a unnatural species, a more paranormal or ultra normal creature.
Yeah, something beyond what we know. And granted, there have been numerous discoveries to that end. There were the pygmy deer that were found in Vietnam about a decade ago by researchers that local indigenous people had been talking about and telling them about and finally found. I don't put it past science to be able to find these things. I think what it comes down to, Ryan, is that, yes, number one, we need to be able to provide to science. Those of us that are out there gathering data, those groups that are out doing Sasquatch hunts, that kind of stuff, don't just go out willy-nilly in the woods. Find out how a biologist goes about collecting samples. You know, stuff like that. And I guarantee you that if biologists start seeking out local, even bear biologists, things like that, like, it would behoove you to contact your local squatchers, because guaranteed they've got trail cams that they can give you pictures from. The cooperation between the two could really be great and vast, and would expand even the scientific network of what is available rapidly.
Yes, like I think it was a story from somewhere in East Texas, actually, that a Bigfoot researcher went to a local zoologist saying, hey, I got this weird photo. And of course, it wasn't a Bigfoot, it was actually a bear. And they're like, wait, bears aren't even supposed to be found in this area. And of course, that kicks off a whole other thing that's, of course, not just zoological, but it's zoological. And it helps add, well, if a large bear species could not be seen here, and we know they live here, if the locals know they live here, but the local zoologists aren't willing to say they do, what else could be out here?
Yeah. Yeah, precisely. I mean, it opens up a whole conversation like that, as well as conversations of preservation, things like that. You know, it's only through discovery that we end up preserving things. So, we really do have to, I think, focus on that end. Once again, find out how to forensically handle evidence, you know, because it's great to bring in, like, hey, doc, here's a Ziploc baggie with some stuff in it. Well, did you treat it properly between point A and B? Was it stored at proper temperatures? You know, how would you go about storing samples like that to make sure that they aren't destroyed? That kind of stuff.
Yeah.
So,
like,
go ahead.
Like, I'm trying to remember. I think it was like one of those kind of game show like shows on the Paramount Network years and years ago. I think it was about like trying to discover Bigfoot, and it was like a cash prize if you're able to find Sasquatch. And a part of that game, like the show, was collecting evidence correctly.
Yeah.
Like, for instance, a lot of people, when they collect hair samples, they don't wear, like, gloves or masks because all of that is trace DNA.
Yep.
Any type of DNA put on the, like, hair sample totally ruins it.
Yeah. Yeah, precisely.
Samples and all that. And this is things that are very important to this field because in proper collection of evidence will only put keep this field stagnant. Like, how many... Like, how many Bigfoot hairs come back as human just because of possible cross-contamination?
Yeah. Yeah. Cross-contamination is huge, huge, huge in samples and in laboratory work. So when you're talking about bringing things in from the wild, you really do have to watch what you're using to preserve it and how you're preserving it. And are you treating it forensically? Are you gathering the proper field data as far as GPS location, you know, time of day, things like that. So looking into how scientists keep field journals, things like that, so that when you bring it to them, it's as complete as possible on their end, you know?
Yeah, like the collection of evidence, like just data. The collecting of data is very important because when having large data sets, you can see things like patterns of sightings or patterns of very similar creatures being seen in the same area or like seasonal. Like I remember a couple years back, there was a study in the Rocky Mountains that showed that these Sasquatch sightings were changed in elevation seasonally. And this automatically implies that there's some type of physical creature behind this, because I don't think I don't know of anything else that would migrate between elevations.
Yeah, yeah, precisely. It's pretty phenomenal to see some of the research that is going on now. To see once again the larger names in science that have come forward, not only in UAP, UFO research recently, but in the world of cryptid research and in the world of Bigfoot research, stuff like that. There is really some new eyes starting to look at old evidence. So it's really fantastic.
Yeah. Like how I always say it, it's always going to have evidence and old or new. But sometimes that old evidence does need new eyes upon it because you bring in a different paradigm, a different perspective that maybe the older generation might not have seen.
Yep. Yeah, precisely. And, you know, one prime example of that is the Patterson-Gimlin film. That has still to this day stood the test of any analysis as far as being faked or anything like that. So far as they can tell, as of right now, it is a genuine piece of footage.
Yeah.
So yeah, pretty phenomenal. And every time that like new video technology comes out, new, you know, stride and gait measurement technology, all that kind of stuff, it's applied, and it only seems to strengthen the case. Every time someone's always like, oh, I'm going to disprove it. And well, no, they never really do. So, yeah, pretty interesting.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Go ahead. Yeah, I was going to say, like, it's funny, especially when people that try to disprove it, prove it in the end. It's like when I believe it's like Flat Earth Society tried to prove the Earth was flat and totally in the end proved it was round. It's like, it's kind of like the same ideology of like you try to disprove something, but then you just find out you're wrong in the end.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. In the long run, you just ended up end routing yourself back to the actual truth of it.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's pretty wild. Now, before we get into shameless self-promotion, things like that, how does your world as a teacher relate to your world of cryptozoological study, Ryan?
well with me. I try my best to try to keep them separated, because of course, if people hear like, "Oh, you hunt monsters in the woods," they might see me as crazy, and it's not. It's like a someone that there should be a teacher. But what I do is mostly I try to show them that there is science within cryptozoology. Of course, there is the pseudoscience word around cryptozoology, and I'll admit that myself. But I talk about the other sciences that go hand in hand with it, with zoology, biology, ecology, like paleoanthropology, paleontology, archaeology, anthropology, and I talk about how, for instance, cryptozoology is a good introduction to sciences. Because, like, we know, everyone knows small children, they love a good monster story and dinosaurs, things like that. And if you could introduce cryptozoology to them, it would, of course, get them hooked, of course, just by seeing monsters that live in the woods. But then you can kind of go beyond that to that next step and show them, hey, these aren't just monsters that are out there to hurt you and stuff like that. These are creatures that can be discovered thanks to science. And I also look at like how history and how culture has affected these animals, and how like belief sets and perspectives and paradigms and even religious beliefs have altered cryptozoology and the study of cryptids throughout time, and how unknown species have persisted throughout cultures for thousands of years. But with me, I usually, as a teacher, try to bring in cryptozoology as a good introduction into science, or as a good way to show that science might not have all the answers, but it's a good way to get the answers. Maybe it's questions we don't even know we want to ask yet. Like, what is Bigfoot? Things like that. Of course, you can ask the question, but how do you get that answer? And it's via science.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And not just science, but, you know, filtering information and going yeah. through and filtering, you know, hypothesis from theorem, things like yeah. that. So,
like, huge like a friend of mine
skills.
Yeah, like a friend of mine that was an English teacher. He brought me in one day for argumentative tech, because of course, because of zoology, a lot of it's argumentative. Sure. You have to be able to try to persuade people into your beliefs, and not just beliefs, into like knowledge. Using like, okay, pathos, ethos, logos. You have to use logic, of course. You use scientific methods. Sometimes you might have to use an emotional response, usually with eyewitnesses, but also you can just use like your name as like, okay, no, I've been in this field for so long and for this long, and we know what we're talking about. So I try to bring in like this study into like almost every curriculum I can teach about, especially science, history, and English.
Wow, absolutely, man, and I love nothing more than knowing that educators, people like that, are out there talking about topics like this with the upcoming generation of students, because it really is that keeping of an open mind and that willingness to explore a topic. It's kind of like it's sad to see how many schools no longer have a debate team.
Yeah.
You know? Because there is an art to debate, team, and there is an art to debate. And the idea is taking in information, filtering it, and being able to use it, rapidly. And that is a lost and gentle art. And to know that you are still helping kids, learn those methods of critical thinking, Ryan, that you are still out there, introducing these topics to the next generation. It's fantastic to hear, man.
Thank you. Because like with me, I try to bring it in because it's a good little like teaching moment. Because even you can see like, okay, like if someone has a different opinion than you, it doesn't, it matters or it doesn't matter. Like, okay, you think someone's wrong just because they have a different opinion. You never know, you could be wrong. See how you can find a common ground and come to different perspectives and look through the world with someone else's eyes. And cryptozoology, even though it's a pseudoscience, can help with that. Help analyzing evidence and analyzing belief sets and maybe even changing your own paradigm. Because with me, an open mind, an open mind is very important to this world. You have to come into this world with an open mind and not be closed-minded, because then why even learn and be educated in the first part?
Yeah. Yeah, precisely. Precisely. It is such a necessary part of actual conversation and to growing humanity as we know it. Thank you so much for keeping that alive, Ryan. It really is an important skill that all too often is not utilized by people. So frequently, people want to turn a paradigm into their own instead of appreciating a paradigm for what it is. You know?
Yeah. They let ego take over.
Yeah, yeah, most definitely. And your book, Cryptids of the World, is great. I've read it at least a couple times since I got it from you. It is a super easy and great read. If you're a traveler like me, great airplane, great airport read. You can pick it up at Amazon.com. Ryan, tell everybody where they can go to follow you, where they can keep up with the latest and greatest, where they can find out about upcoming appearances, book signings, things like that.
Of course. With me, I try to do as many in-person events as I can. The most recent one that's going to be coming up is October, the Jefferson Bigfoot Research Conference here in Texas, out in Jefferson, Texas. It's a great event. I'm going to be a vendor there. I hope to be a speaker there one day in the future. That'd be a great thing to do in maybe 10, 20 years, but no time soon. But I'm a vendor there. If you want to go talk to me in person, like, that's a great thing to do. Pick up my book there. I also have a podcast, the Cryptid Chronicles, on YouTube. If you look me up there, I try to release an episode every Saturday at 7 p.m. And what it is, it's a live show. Well, because I want to try to have a chat going so I can talk to people in person. Because there's been times that people go in there and talk to me about the eyewitness accounts. And I love trying to talk to them. Like, hey, you send me an email later today and I want to try to talk to you. If you guys are interested in trying to talk to me other than there, I also have a Facebook. If you look me up on Facebook as Ryan Edwards, I'll most likely be one of the first people to show up. I also have an Instagram, R. Edwards at Crypto25. All that, it will be also linked at my YouTube account. I also have a website, thecryptochronicles.net. There you have a direct link to my podcast and a direct link to my book. My book, you can pick it up at Amazon.com, Barnes & Noble, Half Price Books, most places where books are sold. So there are many ways you guys can reach out to me. I love talking to eyewitnesses, fellow researchers, just people that are interested in talking and having discussions. So please reach out to me, guys.
Yeah, absolutely, man. It is always a pleasure talking with you. It was a great pleasure running into you this last weekend at the Wonderland UFO Conference. Man, I'm happy to hear that your show is going well. You are 10 episodes deep, and can't wait to see the next one come out. Hold the line real quick while we close things out here with the audience, and we'll chat with you off air. While you are online checking out everything from Ryan Edwards and Cryptid Chronicles over at cryptidchronicles.net, thecryptidchronicles.net, make sure to stop on by curiousrealm.com. That is where you can share your story at curiousrealm.com/story. It's where you can find the store, where you can find our episodes, where you can download the free app if you're an Android user. All you have to do is click the little Android picture and it'll sideload right onto your device. No privacy from Google taken or anything like that. So stop on by, check it out. CuriousRealm.com. Make sure to stop on by and check out our coverage upcoming of the International Association for Near-Death Studies. I will be leaving for that tomorrow morning and airing that footage coming up soon. So remember, everybody, take care of yourselves, take care of each other, and stay curious. We'll talk to you soon. Bye-bye. Thank you for tuning into this episode of The Curious Realm. Stay tuned for more guests, forbidden topics, and hidden truths. Download the official Curious Realm app and view the Knowledge Vault on our website, CuriousRealm.com. Follow us on social media by searching Curious Realm. Curious Realm is available on your favorite podcast services, as well as YouTube, Roku, Amazon Fire, and Apple TV through the APR TV app, available on all app markets. Curious Realm is a proud member of the HC Universal Network family of podcasts. For more great content or to become a sponsor of Curious Realm or other podcasts, visit hcuniversalnetwork.com today. Thanks for listening. Stay curious. And remember, the other side is always watching.